Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cricket Unfiltered, the News Corp cricket podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel, aka Menas, and with the huge ball tampering scandal, the schedule for the podcast has been completely thrown out of whack. But in this edition of the podcast, I've got a special interview with Doug Bollinger. I catch up with Fiona Bolland from The Swoop to talk about the Australian women's cricket team and look at their season as a whole. But before we get into those interviews, I just want to give my thoughts on the sanctions handed down by Cricket Australia that have come out of the findings from the integrity unit that was sent over to South Africa. So I think there's a few key things. Firstly, it was discovered that it wasn't tape, that it was sandpaper, and that Smith, Warner and Bancroft allegedly lied about saying it was tape. Even at that press conference after day three in South Africa, they said it was tape rather than sandpaper, which I guess makes it even worse. Not that it was just sandpaper, but they sort of lied in the aftermath to that. It's also been discovered that perhaps David Warner was the ringleader and he got Cameron Bancroft involved, and Steve Smith knew about it and almost sanctioned them to go ahead and try and alter the condition of the ball. So they're quite damning findings from the inquiry. You know, I just go back to the way the whole thing was managed is a complete failure from the players themselves, the support staff there. It was also found out that Darren Lehman didn't know, and that when he was seen on the walkie-talkie, he was literally asking what the F was going on. So in the wake of those findings, Cricket Australia have banned Steve Smith and David Warner for 12 months from playing any form of cricket apart from club cricket. Steve Smith cannot be a leader in the Australian team for 2 years. So 1 year after his ban is over, he will be considered for a leadership position. Warner has been banned from any leadership role within the Australian team in the future. So that means his T20 captaincy is gone. His ambitions to perhaps lead Australia in the T20 format are gone. And that's a done deal. Bancroft has 9 months out of the game, so 3 months less than Smith and Warner. So we will see Bancroft come back into the game right at the end of this year. I guess in a way that's heartening for a young man like that, that he'll get a shot at redemption in this year. So I sort of think, I thought about those sanctions beforehand, what I would have given out, and now I'm thinking about how Cricket Australia have done it. I thought 6 months for Smith and Warner might have been more appropriate. And the reasons behind it are that the precedent set by the ICC and the sanctions handed out to other international captains that have been found to ball tamper or cheat have never really reached the levels of a one-year suspension. So Cricket Australia are going well beyond any precedent set before that. Although Cricket Australia are doing it for the way they've damaged the spirit of the game, and not just the ball tampering issue, but also the damage they've done to the brand. So I get why they've done 12 months. I don't think it's really over the top, considering the backlash from this, considering the damage it's done to cricket in this country. But if Steve Smith will be able to appeal this and get it down to 6 months, I don't think that is completely unjustified, considering he didn't organise it, and any other international captain found to have done something similar has never been punished in the way Steve Smith has. And you only have to see the scenes of Smith leaving Johannesburg at the airport, almost being hounded like a criminal. You know, as much as I criticize him for his actions in Cape Town, it still really tugged on the heartstrings to see Steve Smith fall so far so quickly. I don't believe he is a bad person. I don't believe he is a malicious, or I don't believe he is a cheat in his heart. I just think he's somehow lost his way, and we need to bring him back. And you know, when he returns to Australian cricket, I believe he will be all the more better for this experience. And there's a few other issues to come out of this. The sponsors are starting to pull out of both individually and on a Cricket Australia level, so that is impacting the financial health of the game. There is rumours that David Warner could seek legal advice and take this matter further because it is unprecedented and because he's not able to play in the Indian Premier League, which is ironic considering how many problems they have with corruption, that they're sitting trying to grab the moral high ground and keep Smith and Warner out. I just think that's ridiculous. So it could get messy. If Warner were to start to point the finger at other people in the dressing room, you could see a massive chasm in the Australian cricket team, and just this could continue. Well, sorry, you've already seen a massive chasm, but this could linger for months and months and months. I heard one of, my colleagues at News Corp, Robert Crash Craddock, saying that he doesn't think Steve Smith can ever skipper this Australian side again. And initially, I thought that was the case, but I have considered this. He's so young. I think he's 28. He's 2 years before he can be considered again. Then perhaps 2 years, when he's 32, he could be given the captaincy again. And this experience will have changed him, where we could have a much, much better captain, a man with a much stronger moral compass, a man with immense experience. And this will have irrevocably changed him, and perhaps it will make him a better captain in the future. If we get to see it or not, that's something that only time will tell. So it's been quite a week for Australian cricket. It's impacted, I think, all cricket fans really hard. I feel loads of emotions, anger. As I said at the time, I felt like my heart had just been ripped out. I can cop it when we go over the line in the heat of the moment. I can cop it when we sledge people. But to take some sandpaper onto the ground and try and alter the condition of the ball was such a gross error of misjudgment. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. But all that aside, Cameron Bancroft, Steve Smith need our support. Smith and Bancroft, two young men who've made a horrible mistake, but they deserve a shot at redemption and they deserve the support of the Australian people because it was just a gross error of misjudgment. And they will know that better than anyone. All right, we're going to take a short break and then I'll be back with Fiona Bolland to talk about the Australian women's cricket team. Welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered, the News Corp cricket podcast. Manners here. And now joining me on the line is the editor of the Swoop, which is the women's sport section for News Corp. Welcome to the show, Fiona. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Manners?
Yeah, I'm okay. It's been a tumultuous few days in Australian cricket. We were discussing wrapping up the women's cricket season. You made a good point off air that it's not all doom and gloom in Australian cricket. We do have another team that are doing really well.
That's exactly right. I suppose one of the things, apart from being disappointed like the rest of Australia and shocked and appalled at what the men's side has done, I've been a little bit disappointed as well at the reference of, oh, it's a dark day for Australian cricket. The Australian cricket team has done this. There's a pretty fair distinction these days that it's not just the Australian cricket team. It's the Australian men's cricket team and there's the Australian women's cricket team. And this was most definitely a dark day for the men's team. But the women are over in India and they're performing really well after what was pretty much a tough 2017 for them, or an underperforming one, I suppose you could say. They've really lifted their standard and they're playing great cricket over there. They're playing with a bit of fearlessness, I think is the word they're throwing around. Trying to be a bit more foot on the throat and, taking it to the teams a bit more than what they have been in the past. And so there is great cricket happening. They're playing with a lot of integrity, which you can't really be said for the men's team right now. And so if you want to have a bit more faith restored in cricket in Australia, follow the Southern Stars because they're still doing really great and they've regained that number one position in the world.
It's interesting what you say about the fact that they sort of had a disappointing year last year. I interviewed Elise Perry, which is, I think, two episodes ago now on the podcast, maybe three. And, you could see the disappointment still lingers with their World Cup exit in the semi-final to India. I mean, it is a very competitive Australian team and they are disappointed that they weren't able to go one step further, even sort of 6 months after when I was talking to Elise.
Yeah, and they really should have gone at least to the final in that World Cup. It was a disappointing campaign for them. There were some missed opportunities and I think they're definitely still feeling that now. And what we're seeing in how they played over in India, they were so strong in those ODIs that they played against just India. They're now in a tri-series against India and England in T20. But, you know, a real ruthless kind of approach now, where they probably found last year at the World Cup they didn't seize their moments, and that's what they're really trying to do now, is to attack teams. And that's where India caught them in that semi-final at the World Cup. They came out and they went hard, and Australia just weren't able to catch it and get the game back under control. So they're now trying to be the team that goes out hard and takes control of the game from the start, and are the ones who dictate how it runs. And that's what we saw in these ODIs. Nicole Bolton had a couple of great innings. She had a century and an 84. Elise Perry herself had a 70 not out. And Alyssa Healy in that final game was a player of the match performance with 133. That's the kind of batting that they probably wish they used or had at the World Cup last year. And that getting that number one ranking back was very important for them. They've done it. They're only just ahead of England by about 1 point, I think it is. I think they're on 130. England are on 129. And I was speaking to Matthew Mott while he was over in India, the coach, and he said it's not even just about getting that number one ranking back for them. They really want to put some space between themselves and number two. So they're not going to sit back and think their job is done now. They've still got a pretty big year this year. They've got the World T20 coming up at the end of the season, end of the year, sorry. And so there's a lot to be done between now and then. So it's an exciting year for them again.
Yeah, definitely. So they won the one-day series in India 3-0. Now they're playing a T20 tri-series against India and England. I guess that's building up now to the T20 World Cup that's later in the year for Australia.
Yeah, so that's in November in the West Indies. And T20's probably been their weaker format. They've been very strong in the ODIs. So they're really going to be working hard to try and figure out how they can win this World T20, because that's what their goal is. And I suppose probably for Matthew Mott as well. He's been coach for a few years now, and he hasn't really had too many big wins. He missed out on the World Cup. They got the Ashes series at the end of last year. So a World T20 would be pretty important for him too. They lost to the West Indies in 2016. And yeah, it's a format that they probably don't perform as well in as they'd like to. And England have already beaten them in this tri-series. So there's a bit of work to do, and they'll tinker with their team a little bit, I think. Nicole Bolton used to be in the lineup for the T20s, and she's not been selected in this tri-series for the T20s. So I think there'll be a bit of shuffling around throughout the year as they try and find their best 11 to take on that World T20 and try and get the trophy as well.
Yeah, so it was 2 years ago that the West Indies won the World T20. And I think that Australia's T20 game must have improved in leaps and bounds since in the last 2 years because of the Women's Big Bash League. The fact that all these players have got so much experience now, the Australia's T20 squad is so deep that surely they must go into the World T20 as, if not favourites, very close.
You'd like to think so, and the performances of the Australian women especially in the WBBL just gone were outstanding, and we have seen a dramatic improvement each season of the WBBL in terms of the scores. Like, we were getting plus 200 scores this season, which, you know, wasn't happening when it first started. And it's by far and away the premier T20 competition for women in the world, which is why we see so many international players coming out to play in it as well. It's a long season for them. They get a lot of games. So for Australia, it's about translating that form that they have in the WBBL and doing it in the Australia team, which is what seems to be missing at the moment. They just haven't been able to pull it together as a national side. So it'll be interesting, because the World T20 is being played before the next WBBL, WBBL 04. So it will be the lead-in to the next season. So hopefully they'll probably be having a few more series to try and keep that form up and being playing together as a team, which might make the difference for them rather than coming from their club team and going into the Australia setup.
Certainly. And now, Fiona, as we sort of come to the end of the domestic cricket season in Australia, and I wanted to sort of look back at the women's cricket season as a whole and just ask you, you know, to pick out a couple of highlights from the summer.
For me, I think that Ashes series that was hosted here was a highlight. It really showed how far women's cricket has come. There was a sellout at Allan Border Field in Brisbane to start the whole series against England. And, you know, that's probably something that they wouldn't have even dreamt of a couple of years ago. So the fact that they're able to have a few thousand turn up for that first opening match is just, you know, a real sign of the potential of what's been achieved to date. And then I did love watching the Sydney Sixers go back-to-back in the WBBL this summer. They were one of the best teams the whole season. They were consistent, which is something they hadn't done the previous two seasons. They had some sort of, you know, losing streaks followed by winning streaks, but they played consistently. And, of course, within that, the highlight was Sarah Coit, who came in to replace the two South African internationals who had to go home. She had retired from international cricket the year before and had only been playing some domestic cricket to date, and then came in and I think she took about 8 wickets in 3 matches, and it was just a phenomenal effort, showed what a class player she is. And I think it was satisfying for herself to prove that she could still do it. I don't think we'll see her back in the green and gold again. I think she was satisfied with her WBBL cameo. Whether or not she plays next season is to be seen. But, you know, it showed what a strong character she is to be able to do that and not succumb to the pressure, which she had been finding a bit much. She retired because of some anxiety issues that she wanted to make sure she dealt with properly. So it was a nice little story within the greater back-to-back story of the Sixers.
Yeah, she's come back, Sarah Coit, looking so fit and athletic. Just an extraordinary story to not only come back but to then dominate in the knockout games of the WBBL was just amazing. I sort of look back at the Ashes day-night test at North Sydney Oval with such fondness because of the sort of the feel-good nature of the event. There was such a great spirit around the ground, and I think that, I know, while with all this controversy swirling around the men's team, to just look back on that occasion, it really sort of symbolises what cricket should be about.
Yeah, it's a beautiful ground for cricket, and you do get that kind of grassroots feel to it, don't you? People wandering by outside, sticking their head in to see what's going on. And, of course, there was Elise Perry's amazing 200 in that as well. You know, to see her get her maiden century in Sydney and then turn it into a double century, the whole place was just buzzing because of it. Even though it was a pretty much lackluster test, that was a nice little highlight. And I love a bit of cricket at North Sydney Oval too. I think I wish we could have some more top level cricket played there, because it's such a nice ground to take in the sun and spend a day there, really.
Yeah, I think we saw the Women's Big Bash League kick off at North Sydney Oval, and that was a sort of a festival weekend of cricket. And I know the head of the Big Bash, Kim McConney, has talked about recreating that atmosphere for the Women's Big Bash more often, having those festival weekends, which I think is just great for the game.
Yeah, and I hope next season there was a lot of conjecture around how the final series are done in the Women's Big Bash. And hopefully next season, CA take a look at that and work with Channel 10 to see how it can be done better. And I think a festival weekend where the finals are just played out at one of those suburban grounds would be a great way to really package up the women's game and make it stand on its own and get it going as its own competition rather than having the finals piggybacking on the men's. I think the time for that is gone, and they deserve to be playing in front of a lot of people rather than an empty stadium before a men's game.
I agree. You mentioned Elise Perry's double hundred before. You know, one of my highlights of the season was sitting down with her and interviewing her for half an hour and getting to know an athlete that has done so well in more than one sport. And what was immediately apparent to me is how focused she is, how she really puts all the noise to the side and just focuses on her game and practicing hard, but also the appreciation of where she has got to and where her game has got to. You know, when she started playing women's cricket, it wasn't nearly as high profile as it is now. And I think she's been integral in raising the profile, but she's so appreciative of the fact that she can be a full-time athlete. I thought it was a really refreshing chat.
Yeah, it's nice to sit down with a lot of those women's players who have, you know, they've had to work really hard to get where they are, and there is a lot of passion still there because they had to manage jobs only a few years ago as well as their cricket and take time off work to go on tours and things like that. So there's a true commitment that exists there, and it's something that they absolutely wanted to do, and they'll do anything to get there. And Pez made that decision a while ago to stick with cricket. I think it was sort of forced on her, but you know, at that time, football was probably a more lucrative option, but she stuck with the cricket because that's where her heart was. And thank God she did, because she's a pleasure to watch. And she is one of the hardest working athletes in this country. You can guarantee if you turn up to a training session, she's already in the nets and she's hitting ball after ball and making sure that she's 100% on her game. And that's as other players are just arriving for the training session. And she'll be there after as well, and you'll have to sit and wait a few extra minutes to have your interview with her, because she won't leave until she's hit enough balls or bowled enough balls. And that's the type of role model that we're talking about in terms of our elite athletes in Australia. Exactly that. Someone who can show your kids, this is how hard you have to work, this is how much you have to want it, but if you do it, you can get there.
And don't lose sight from where you've come from. I think it's important.
Absolutely.
In this tumultuous time, Fiona. Well, thanks for catching up and talking about the Australian women's cricket team. It's a big year. Can't wait. And hopefully we'll win the World T20.
Yes, hopefully. Always a pleasure, Menas. Thanks.
That was Fiona Bolan, editor of The Swoop, the place to keep up with women's sport in the Daily Telegraph. Okay, we're going to be back in a moment with Doug Bollinger for a special feature interview. But before we do that, I just want to remind you all, if you've got a moment, can you rate and review the podcast on whatever app you listen to the show on? Those reviews are really good for other people to find the show. So if you can do that, it'd be much appreciated. You can find me on Twitter at Amenas, AmeNNERS, or you can find the podcast at Oz Cricket Pod. If you've got any questions or thoughts that you'd like to throw at me, that's the place to do it. All right, we'll be back in a minute with former Australian fast bowler Doug Bollinger.
Oh, that's close. That's swung in, and he's got him. Doug Bollinger gets the early breakthrough, and BJ Watling gets the first bowler.
You're listening to Cricket Unfiltered, the News Corp cricket podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel, and now I have a pre-recorded feature interview with one of my very favourite cricketers. Doug Bollinger played 12 tests for Australia and took 50 wickets at 26 runs per wicket. He played in 39 one-day internationals and took a very impressive 62 wickets in those 39 matches. Now, I spoke to Doug a couple of weeks ago before Australian cricket sunk into a mire of controversy and calamity, and in his own way, he does give some perspective on how fortunate these professional athletes are. So joining me now is Doug Bollinger. Doug, how are you?
Good. How are you going, mate? Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on. I used to love watching you bowl so much because you just put so much passion in it. You wore your heart on your sleeve, kissing the VB logo. Did you have as much fun as it looked?
Absolutely. You know, cricket's a wonderful game, and it's a great time to be out there with, you know, 11 of your mates and playing, you know, playing for your state and playing for your country. There's no better thing to do.
And I guess, how's early retirement?
It's been good at the moment. I've played a bit of golf and, you know, done a lot more with my family. I've got a young family. So, it's been good.
A lot of athletes, when they retire, they say that they sort of wake up one day and they just know it's time to give it up. How was your experience with that?
funnily enough, it's so cliche, but that was pretty much it, mate, to be honest. But, you know, I just... You know, doing, you know, warm-ups and, you know, all these kind of things that, you know, you think, I just didn't feel like it anymore. So I just, you know, I just woke up. As much as I love the guys and I love the game, it was just one of those decisions where I just thought, no, I just I just don't have it anymore. So yeah, that was basically it, mate.
Yeah, and you know, you played for New South Wales for such a long time. Was it sort of hard to say goodbye to all those ties that you have?
I've still kept in contact with most of the guys, you know. But yeah, it was a hard decision. I haven't been back in there yet to clean all my stuff out. So, but no, it was a tough. You know, it's like anything. It's tough to say goodbye to a lot of things. But you know, it's not gonna, you know, you're good to yourself because it's not gonna be there forever, is it? So, you know, I just knew I'm comfortable with where I am and I'm comfortable with my position. And yeah, it was quite hard to say goodbye, mate.
Now, I want to just sort of look back on some parts of your career. When you sort of go back to the beginning, you know, when you came into the New South Wales side, it was sort of different era. Steve Waugh was the captain at the time. What was it like for a young Doug Bollinger to go into that side, mate, full of greats?
Oh, mate, when Steve Waugh was your very first captain, it's quite amazing, you know. But I just tried to take it all in from what I can remember. I just took it all in. I was, you know, a young, fresh kid from Sydney West. So, you know, I just try to take in as much as I can and just realise that you're playing sport for a living. You know, it's a great game. And no, I just tried to learn and ask as many questions as I could.
And do you remember what sort of guidance you were given from those senior players?
I think you just learn from their actions, you know. Steve Waugh didn't talk much, but geez, when he said run, you ran with him, didn't you? And that's a great thing about, you know, such a big squad. There are all different personalities that you can learn different things from.
And have there been any sort of people or coaches or mentors that have really helped you in your journey?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When I first started, I thank a lot to Trevor Bayliss and Steve Rickson. Trevor Bayliss was Sec 11 coach and Steve Rickson was coach at that time, and they just gave me a wonderful opportunity. You know, they just let me play cricket and see how I evolved, and I think that's a perfect way of letting someone express themselves.
Yeah, and that was lucky enough for you to get picked for Australia. You made your test debut in 2009 against South Africa at the SCG.
Yep.
Do you remember that when they gave you your Braggy Green, who presented it? What was that sort of moment like when you found out?
Oh, mate, it's a massive moment, that, you know. You dream about these things your whole life and then it happens. But, yeah, Ricky gave me my... Ricky gave me my shirt, my hat, and had a bit of a speech in the circle before warm-ups and all that. So, yeah, it was a very special moment, and especially doing it at the SCG, you know, one of my top five, you know, four or five favourite grounds ever. So, yeah, that was the best part.
And do you remember who your first wicket was?
I think my first wicket was, I think it was Graham McKenzie or Mornay Morkel.
Oh,
wow. Not sure. I think it was Mornay Morkel.
Wow, look at that. And... you know, how long did it take you to feel like you belonged in the Australian side?
Oh, mate, yeah, I think just with the guys, you always feel welcome, you know, because you're surrounded by, you know, other cricketers that are going through the same stuff you are. So you just got to, you know, you find the people that you click best with and just try and, you know, move around that kind of group and just go from there. But, you know, I always felt that I was a part of it and I just tried to do everything that I could to play.
And, you know, you played in a test match at the SCG versus Pakistan in January 2010. I was at this match and I think Australia were 200 runs behind on the first innings, and then Australia roared back to win on the last day.
Yep.
It was a great victory, some great catches. Haddon took a great catch. Horitz took a great catch. I left this SCG cock-a-hoop. But then it sort of came out afterwards that maybe there was a bit, might have been some match fixing involved with that game. Did you sort of feel anything around that at the time?
No. I was there to play the game. You know, I enjoyed playing for Australia, and I didn't think of anything like that, mate. So no.
You played a test in India. You had a very successful 2 years in the Aussie Test side. 50 wickets after 12 tests at an average of 26, 62 one-day international wickets. You were named in the ICC's Test and One-Day Teams of the Year in 2010. Were that sort of the pinnacle of your bowling form? Did you feel that was the best you bowled?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's a great, you know, reward, trying your best and getting in there. So, yeah, I feel that was a wonderful time in my life. And being named in a team like that, it's really good for your confidence.
Yeah, and do you sort of feel like at the end of that you got a raw deal by the selectors, considering you weren't picked again?
Oh, mate, that's the way the ball goes. That's the way it rolls, mate. So, and I'm proud of what I've done and proud of where I've played and what I've had to do with cricket. So now I can, you know, I'm retired now. I can enjoy the rest of my life and just go on from there.
Yeah, and just, I guess, enjoy the success you had.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. It's you know, I've got to play sport for a living for a long time, and you know, it's hard not to take that for granted. You know, it's a great thing to do.
It seems like you're a glass half full kind of guy, and you don't have any sort of bitterness or regret about your career. It just seems like you really take all the positives you can from it.
Absolutely, mate. You know, I think that's the best way of looking at it. You know, it's as I keep saying, you know, I was playing sport for a living, so not many people can say that. So, no, I'm happy with where I am and what I've done, and yeah, there's no use being bitter or emotional or angry. I can move forward and, you know, try and help and coach some people coming through, some, you know, some younger guys and some even some older guys. So hopefully I can return the favour that way.
Do you enjoy the coaching?
Yeah, I do. I've started to do more and more of it, you know, and you know, when you're coaching, you see young kids or even older kids, like older guys, learning and getting better with what they're doing. It's a great achievement.
Yeah, I guess when you can see any cricketer improve, that's what you get the satisfaction out of.
It
doesn't have
absolutely,
to be best
you know,
cricketer.
It just means you've, yeah, absolutely. It just means that you've, you know, you're passing on what I've learned from coaches from my past.
That's good. So you still enjoy the game. You just didn't
want
to play
absolutely,
anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason not to enjoy it, you know.
Now, I was sort of looking through a list of some of the batsmen you got out at test level. It's pretty good. Chris Gayle, Brendan McCullum, Sachin Tendulkar. Any of those wickets particularly satisfying?
Oh, no, mate. I'm just really glad I got to bowl against those you know, legends of the game. That's the best part of it. I've got to play against these unreal players, and it's great. And, you know, it's something that I can't take back. It's there forever.
And any batsman used to wind you up? Is there any that you were just like, all right, I'm going to really stay
no, here? I think that's just the game, isn't it? You know, you're in the hot sun for 4 or 5 days and things get emotional and all that. But, you know, that's part of it. No, not many batsmen really got under my skin. I probably just wanted to get them out more.
Yeah, wow. Now, you sort of were a bit of a trailblazer for this T20 generation because, you know, you won back-to-back IPL titles with the Chennai Super Kings when they came into the competition. You're a bit of a cult figure over there. So there were some stories written about your retirement. They called you the Eagle.
Yeah.
Where do those titles rate in your sort of career?
I don't know, mate. You know, nicknames like that, when you hang around guys for so long, you just make up names and stuff like that. It doesn't bother me, mate. It's part of the fun, and it's part of being, you know, of a group. You know, if people are giving you nicknames and that, it must mean they like you.
Yeah, that's not a bad nickname. But where do those IPL titles rate? I mean, it was so new back then.
I think being a part of the IPL, it was just being a part of such a great competition, and you know, and all the different players in the team. It just made it lots of fun, and I learned so much off so many players over there. I enjoy being around the guys.
Yeah, and if a young New South Wales bowler said to you they want to go and play some T20 cricket, do you think it's good for a career to get that experience?
Absolutely. I think any cricket you play in any forms and you're meeting new people and other players from different countries, you just got to pick up everything and learn so much from it. So, yeah, if they can get it, why not? It's a great learning curve, and I reckon you can only get better from it.
You also won the ICC Champions Trophy for Chennai. So it must have been a magic time in that Chennai team, full of stars, winning titles, travelling the world.
Yeah, it's good fun, mate. Yeah, I'm glad I've done it. And, you know, it was a part of my life that I enjoyed. And yeah, like as you said, playing with wonderful players, it was good to learn, you know, every part of my game that I could try and get.
And, you know, now that you sort of come to the end of your career, are there any moments that sort of stand out for you as being particularly good memories?
No, mate, I think all of it, you know, I think probably getting my first fifer at the Wacker.
Yep.
You know, I think, you know, that's what you want to get as a bowler. I think just little things like that, get my first fiver, obviously debuting, but yeah, I think getting my first 5-wicket haul and playing a test match at the SCG, I think they're pretty good moments.
You know, which of your teammates do you think made you a better person?
Oh, wow. I've spent a lot of time with Brad Haddin, Simon Kadich. Well, Mike Hussey, you know, I think, you know, he speaks for himself. You know, he's a wonderful guy, but I tried to get along with everyone, you know. There's no reason not to. I think those kind of players that I've spent a lot of time with, it's good to learn and to become a better person off guys like that, the front-run leaders.
It's interesting talking to a few New South Wales cricketers. Simon Kadich and Brad Haddin are two names that come up a lot as being great
yep.
characters. and great leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. They lead from the front. You know, you're out there to play the game. You're out there to win, but they also know you can have your bad days as well. So you just learn as much from them, and that's what leaders do. You know, they lead from the front. They grab everyone and get them together. So that's probably what made them good leaders.
Sort of when you started your career, the Big Bash wasn't around and domestic cricketers had a totally different life to they have now. You must have really seen a lot of changes in your career about the sort of plight of a domestic cricketer. Conditions have got better, there's more opportunities.
Yeah, that's right. The game has to change, doesn't it? It has to evolve. You know, look at BBL now. It's averaging, 30,000 a game or something like that. So, the game's evolving. The game's getting bigger and better. And you know what? It's good for the game. It's good for young kids that, you know, if there was no BBL, you know, some of these players probably, you know, wouldn't be playing cricket, you know, first class or, you know, getting to play at the MCG or the Adelaide Oval. So it's been good for a lot of things.
I think you played for the Hurricanes and the Sixers?
Yes. And I played one season with the Thunder, yeah.
Did you enjoy that Big Bash experience?
Absolutely, yeah. It was great. You know, it kind of came with a bang, didn't it? It just come in and it's taken over, and it's had a wonderful time, you know, over Christmas and the summer. And, you know, you don't know how many people come up to me and say, you know, the BBL's finished, I've got nothing to watch. So it's definitely grabbing an audience.
Will you keep watching now that you're retired?
I don't know. I probably will. I love the game and I love being around it, so I probably will.
Exactly. Well, Doug, what's the plan now? You've retired. What's the future hold for Doug Bollinger?
Mate, I'm just having a bit of a break at the moment, and I'd like to get into the coaching side of it. You know, I want to help some guys become, you know, better cricketers than they are, and I'm not sure. Hopefully, you know, something will come up, and I'll enjoy it. But at the moment, the past couple of weeks have been good, not to live by a schedule. You know, when training is or when this and that is, so it's been quite relaxing.
And you're. Family will get you back on Saturdays now, no more cricket.
Absolutely, yeah. No standing out in the field, yeah. I've got little athletics and dancing and gymnastics and all that fun stuff to go to. So, yeah, it's good.
So from full-time cricketer to full-time dad.
Yep, absolutely, mate.
Well, Doug, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I meant what I said at the beginning. I got so much joy from watching you play. You're a fantastic cricketer. Congratulations on a wonderful career. And enjoy retirement.
Thank you very much, Matt. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, listeners, that's it for Cricket Unfiltered this week. Thanks to Fiona Bolland and Doug Bollinger for coming on the show. We'll be back soon with another podcast.